T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
We've got Tim Kirkjian joining us in about 15 minutes. Tim Kirkjian got to play Yoda last night. May the 4th be with you. He wore a rubber mask. It's not exactly what I wanted. I wanted him to be in full-on, like, make-up Yoda face. We got a bad Halloween costume out of Tim Kirkjian. We're going to talk baseball with him. And if there could be a better-timed Orioles no-hitter than the day we're having Tim Kirkjian on, I don't know when that would be. So we're going to talk to him about that, and obviously about the surprise first-place Giants, and about the fact that the Oakland A's are putting together another streak. They've won 3 in a row. Last night, they got a pretty, really, I mean, not a pretty good outing. They got a really good outing out of Cole Irvin, who has been a nice ad for them, Ray. Cole Irvin scattered 3 hits over 8 innings with 9 strikeouts last night. The A's rode a 4-run second inning to a 4-1 win over the Blue Jays, who they're going to try to polish off in their series tonight. It's going to be Chris Bassitt against Robbie Ray. And again, the A's are streaking. They've won 3 in a row.
They're rolling now.
Come on, baby.
Cole Irvin got off to a bit of a rocky start. Basically, he's a rookie, but you know, has done very well for them, especially given that they kind of need him to step up based on the loss of Jesus Luzardo, because their rotation is still sort of a little bit of white knuckling going on. They just got Mike Fiers back. Look, they're going to be a good team all year long, barring catastrophic injury, because they were a good team last year and a good team the year before that. The thing that I think drives people nuts is that when they get to October, they don't get very far. And last year was the first year they got out of the wild card round in a number of years. So, you know, the proof of the pudding with these guys is in 5 months.
Do you see the way the Astros got booed at Yankee Stadium last night?
Yeah, I was a little surprised that ESPN went with the Star Wars theme on a night when Kyle Tucker could have been killed with a car battery.
Well, here's the thing. You don't get to choose the Star Wars theme. May the 4th does it for you. But, yeah, it was really oddly timed, to say the least. In the F. Altuve, the chants that went up, the old Bronx cheers, they were nasty out last night. They had the forks out for the Houston Astros in New York. There was no doubt about it. Meanwhile, the A's continue to be among the best teams in the American League. Nobody thought that the San Francisco Giants would be among the best teams in the National League, but here we are, folks. And how we got here, we'll try to explain to you in just a second. Where they are today is trailing Colorado, trying to win a getaway game in Colorado. The Giants return home to start a 5-game homestand on Friday. They got 3 against the Padres and then 2 games against the Rangers. Then they're going to embark on an 8-game road trip through Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. That starts next week. By the way, the Rangers, the Pirates, and the Reds, they're all basement dwellers. Like, not only have the Giants played good baseball up to this point, but they've got a really favorable schedule sitting right in front of them. And if they're not running into the Padres or the Dodgers, there's a very good chance that they're going to be the most hittin'est, best pitchin'est team on the baseball field that night. It's really hard to understand. And as I was trying to explain to a station that I was doing a hit on this morning, Ray, is that this is happening on the edge of the roster. This isn't the grand plan. This isn't the, and here we officially go, ramping the Giants up into full-on Farhan contention mode. This is the, here's what we got for you today. What do you think, San Francisco Giants? And they're impressive.
Well, they're winning it with pitching and defense, like they did when they were really good a decade ago.
Yeah.
Because they're still, you know, you look at their lineup, it's profoundly ordinary. I mean, subordinary in some ways. I mean,
they've got three things going for them offensively, and really only three things. Well, four things, if you include the fact that offense is pretty much hard to find from anybody's lineup these days. So not hitting a ton is kind of par for the course around Major League Baseball. The Giants do have, though, fifth most home runs, sixth most RBIs in the National League, third most walks. That's at least churning the lineup.
Yeah, they Buster Posey, everybody should take a year off.
Seriously.
In fact, I tell you what, it's like crop rotation. Every player in Major League Baseball, play 4 years, you take a year off. Play 4 years, you take a year off. And that ought to be just, the union should insist on that. Just to regenerate the body parts that you're wearing out.
20-year careers would be common.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, I don't know that they're, I mean, he's hitting .394 as of this moment. And I realize that batting average is among the least of the things you cite, but it's the thing I have in front of me. And .394 tells you basically that you're making contact effectively 40% of the time. And the other guy who's having a good year for them really is Evan Longoria. Everybody else is lots of outs and the occasional bomb. But what they are doing is making people not hit, which is probably not, you know, defensible today since they gave up a sixth spot in the fourth inning to Colorado.
They gave up a sixth spot in the seventh inning to Colorado last night.
Yeah, so, you know, even playing bad teams, you can get cuffed around. And maybe this is, you know, the world catching up to them the second time around. But they're going to win this based on their pitching and ability to catch the ball. If they can't catch the ball or if their pitching goes south, then they become the team that people thought they were going to be.
Yeah, middle-of-the-road team, but
barely. If they don't pitch well, they're 10th at best because they don't hit well enough. And you can't hit this many homers over the course of a year playing in that ballpark.
How much of a drop-off would the pitching need to just say, all right, well, then the season's over basically? Because here's the deal. The Giants right now, why they have to be looked at as a little bit of a threat, not much of a threat, just a little bit of a threat. They get the second best run differential in the National League.
How much? In response to your question, Gausman's already out.
Right.
Lose another guy.
There's
your answer.
Yeah, you might be right.
That doesn't, you know, settle anything about whether Farhan Zaidi did a brilliant job or Gabe Kapler's a better manager than we thought he was. But you get guys hurt, and a lot of teams have guys hurt. You know, the IL is basically, it's a tavern door. You can't lock it. Guys are in there all the time. And, you know, as long as that's the reality and as long as hitting is as poor as it is, you know, the Giants can hang because they, you know, in a year in which not many guys are hitting the ball, pitchers are going to thrive. Even sort of run-of-the-mill pitchers like Kevin Gausman used to be and like Anthony DeSclafani has been.
You know, still,
and Johnny Cueto, for that matter.
Who is coming back. Sunday, yes. I believe. He will be back in the Giants rotation. Saw that from Susan Slusser this morning in the Chronicle. So, the Giants right now, the second-best run differential in the National League. They've allowed the fewest runs in the National League, besides the Mets, who are about a week of baseball behind the rest of the league due to COVID and rainouts. The Giants started this morning with the fourth-best team ERA in all of baseball, and where they're in just a little spot of a trouble. This is why the West is the best this year. The Padres are number one in terms of ERA in baseball. The Dodgers are number three. And both of those teams also absolutely hit a ton. And that's where they really separate themselves from the Giants. Because they got all that pitching, and they got the offense to complement it. Third most quality starts, though. Giants are getting a pretty good showing from their starting rotation. The bullpen last night, which was leaky. Unfortunately, Jake McGee, who's been good but not great, he's got seven saves, but that ERA is now officially over 5.5. Gave up four hits, had to be pulled last night. on the way to poor Camelo Duval giving up the game-ending three-run homer. But they're good. I mean, they're better than I thought that they would be. They really are, and they get a little credit for that. What wasn't good was the Tim Kirkjian Yoda mask.
I have to go put on my Yoda costume as soon as this is over. And the sad part is it fits.
And Ray is going to basically dunk on Tim for saying yes to this.
Well, he didn't have a choice.
He didn't.
But they won't put Jimmy Pitaro on the show for me to yell at him. So Kirkjian it is.
Kirkjian, you're up next, buddy. Good luck to you. 888-957-9570 is the number. Good to be back in studio. We got Tim Kirkjian joining us next year on 95.7 The Game. In the meantime, our new app is the Odyssey app. Any sound, any interview, any show that you might have missed, you can find it on odyssey.com. Wait until you hear what's in store for you, baby. Odyssey.com. I hate these liners. Can I just say it myself? Wait until you hear what's in store for you. We are Odyssey. Ooh. Like, we are Penn State. We are Odyssey. Okay.
Yeah, I think screwing with a company is a great idea. Go ahead. Knock yourself out.
Wait until you hear what we got in store for you. We are Odyssey, baby.
Yeah, if they want you to read that backwards, you're going to stand on your head and you're going to do it.
We're also brought to you by Network Capital Funding.
I have to go put on my Yoda costume as soon as this is over. And the sad part is it fits.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
I mean, the real sad part is that it was a rubber mask. I thought we were going to get the full-on Industrial Lights and Magic Disney team in there. Serious monster makeup. No, it was just a rubber mask on Tim Kirkjian. I thought the budget was bigger. I'm not going to lie. He gets to join us here on 95.7 The Game. What an ultimate booby prize. How could it get worse for Tim today? Well, Ray Ratto is going to greet him with all sorts of insults because of the Yoda stunt. Thank you so much, Tim, for joining us in the meantime. We really appreciate it. And may the force be with you, sir.
Well, thanks. It was more than the mask, though. I had to wear a robe and something under the robe, and there was a belt, and it was hard to put on because you have to put it on kind of backwards. And I had to go to the bathroom in the seventh inning, and there was nothing in the front, only in the back, so I couldn't go to the bathroom. That was an interesting night in Bristol. Let's put it that way.
Well, let's start first of all with your poor decision to wear something underneath your robe.
Look, Ray, I just did what I was told. I showed up with a three-piece suit, and they said, "No, well, you were going full costume for the whole game." So I did, and then when I put the mask on, I could barely breathe. I could barely see, but we somehow miraculously got through it. We had a pretty good laugh along the way, and that's okay once in a while to have a good chuckle. We're covering baseball for a living. This is not life or death.
Okay, never mind that, though. Why are all these good ideas never good enough for the executive producer to try on his own?
Well,
I mean, it's easy to just, you know, hire the help and go, "Here, look like an idiot for 3 hours and, you know, sweat like Indonesia in the monsoon season." But why aren't they ever doing this stuff?
Well, actually, the entire production crew, everyone in the truck or in the control room was dressed in some form of another. One guy had a lifesaver, but it wasn't the same as what I had to do. And poor Steve Levy, he had to wear the Darth Vader outfit for the entire time. This is the guy who does play-by-play on Monday Night Football, and he was dressed as Darth Vader for like 4 hours doing raps. So I think he had it way, way worse than I did. I only put the mask on when they came to me with something related to Star Wars, May the Force Be With You, whatever. The rest of the time I took it off because it was a little bit muffled with the mask on.
I got news for you. Levy wears that like on weekends when he's not working.
Well, if nothing, I hope you got a couple of free passes to Disney because you absolutely gave it the office. There is no doubt about that. Yoda Kirkjian joining us here on 95.7 The Game. Let's talk a little bit of baseball. And of all the bets that we could have made, I don't think anyone would have bet on the Giants being in first place at any point in time this year. And we certainly wouldn't have bet on Buster Posey returning with Mike Trout level on base plus slugging statistics backing him up. I don't know if a year off has ever done more for a player than it's doing for Posey right now, Tim.
Yeah, he looks really good. He looks like the Buster Posey, maybe not the batting champion MVP Buster Posey, but he looks awfully good. And maybe the year off, maybe the improved health is all he really needed. You know, he's got those great hands at the plate, and maybe he's got that swing back that was just so good. Aaron Boone was and I were at the batting cage years ago, and he said, just look at that move. Just look at that move that he does with his hands. And I can't even see exactly what he's talking about, but he says, I can't do that. Most hitters can't do that. Maybe he's got that move back because he has really swung the bat well. As for the Giants, again, this is the beauty of baseball, that a team that should be a clear third-place team in that division against a team that I kept getting asked, are the Dodgers going to win 118 games this year? They're in first place, the Giants are. They've pitched exceptionally well. They've done most things exceptionally well.
Toward that end, since baseball is enjoying a renaissance of non-hitting, how much of that, in your opinion, is just because it's April? How much of it is the accumulated damage of three true outcomes baseball? And in either event, does that mean that a team like the Giants, who have largely, you know, league average pitching in terms of reputations, can a team like that get away with this for an entire season and look like they're really, really good at this?
I don't think so, Ray. Not for a full season. I think for 60 games, some teams faked their way through it last year, but the game, even in the three true outcomes, usually figures it you out in 162. But I don't think there's any doubt with the way we play the game today. Let's just get it in the air, and we'll worry about everything else later. We're going to hit 232 as a league. We're going to have 1,092 more strikeouts than hits in the month of April, which never happened, of course. We've lost the value of the hit because everyone is just trying to hit it as far as they can. We no longer value a ground single to the right side because that doesn't do enough damage, and yet we're striking out a rate where 41 guys now struck out four times or more in a game this season already, and it's May the 5th. This is the game we play, and this is one reason the Giants are doing so well, and this is why other teams aren't doing so well, but eventually this is going to figure itself out. And I think the best teams will be in the playoffs in October.
Tim, what's it going to take for us to have a pendulum swing back to a little bang-bang baseball? The three true outcomes is a bigger problem to me than time a game has ever been. There is less action in a major league game now than ever before. How does that change? Can it? Or are we too far down the mathematical road to come back from?
We are too far down now with the players that we have. I think it is too late for these guys who have been swinging a certain way for 10, if not 20 years, since they were 10 years old. This is the way they were taught to hit. And they can't change it now, because to ask them to change it and go out and get a hit off of Jacob deGrom when you're going to change the way you've been swinging for the last 15 years, that's not going to work. The only way this is going to work, and it's a long-term fix, is we're going to have to start going to the batting cage with our 10-year-olds and our 12-year-olds and say, look, we're not going to worry so much about our exit velocity here and our launch angle. We're going to try to hit a ball hard someplace. We're going to try to hit it all over the field. We're going to make contact instead of trying to jack everything. And that's where I think it has to start, because I just think it's too late for a lot of our hitters who are overmatched as it is. Now you're going to ask them to make a change in their approach in the middle of the season. I just don't think that's going to work, especially when they're seeing the stuff that they are seeing every single night from virtually every pitcher.
I mean, do you think a little league manager even has the independent thought to tell a kid to choke up anymore?
I don't think so. I think we have a generation of players who have been taught this way, and it's not the player's fault. It is the game's fault. This is our young general managers. These are our new hitting coaches who are saying this is the way to go. And I've said said it 1,000 times, this is not the way to go. The players are bigger, stronger, faster, and better than they've ever been. But the game isn't as good. It's a paradox, and I think we need to acknowledge that as many great players as we have who just overpower the game with their athletic gifts, we need to find a way to play the game better than we are right now, because that many more strikeouts than hits is not a healthy situation.
Okay, since they have to fix something other than the players, which of the nitwit rules they're going to run through the Atlantic League this summer do you think has the best chance of having any kind of effect if it was applied to the major leagues? Or is that just them sort of whistling in a graveyard?
I think it's the latter. I think they're whistling in the graveyard. Look, I'm sorry. I'm 64 years old, and moving the pitching rubber back a foot is a terrible idea. Now, it's a good idea in the minor leagues to see how it goes, but we're trying to protect our pitchers from getting hurt, and yet they all seem to get hurt every single day. And this is going to hurt them even more by moving the rubber back a foot. That's a bad idea. There are so many bad ideas in the minor leagues right now, but it's okay. It's a COVID-affected season. It's the minor leagues. This is where we're supposed to experiment with things and try to find something that's going to work. I don't think anything out there is going to really make the game better. I don't like the runner on second to start the 10th. I don't like seven-inning doubleheaders, but I love it now because we got to get through this season in one piece. And the only way to do that is to speed up the games a little bit. But you're right. The games are slow because we're averaging 19 strikeouts per game and everyone's trying to hit a home run.
Tim Kirchen of ESPN, nice enough to join us here on 95.7 The Game. Meanwhile, the Oakland A's, the last time we talked to you, were having one of their worst starts to a season that they've ever had. Then they go on a darn near Miguel Tejada punctuating it winning streak. And then they start playing two steps forward, one step back baseball. Now they've got a three-game winning streak. Who do you think the Oakland A's can be or are this year so far?
Well, they've thoroughly confused me, as have many teams already this season, and we're barely a month in. I think they're the best team in the division. I thought that at the beginning of the year. I still believe that. And not because I think they're better than last year or the year before. I don't think they are. They lost too much, but they're better than the Astros. They're better than the Angels. They're better than anyone else in that division. So I don't know where they're going from here, because it's hard to gauge. But, you know, Mark Canha has really made the leadoff spot a very productive spot. Jed Lowry from nowhere has become a productive player again. And the two Mats at the corners are great players. So
Jed Lowry's like the only guy hitting doubles in this league now.
He's got 8 doubles already. It's amazing. And Bob Melvin's really, really good at this. So I'm staying with the A's. I think they're the best team in the division, and I think they'll win the West at the end.
Let's go to the AL Central then, and give me your one-month analysis on Tony La Russa.
Well, it's a little early, obviously. We have to give him more than a month, but he just recently acknowledged that he wasn't completely aware of the extra inning rule and how that works. I find that impossible to believe, because Tony's one of the smartest baseball men I've ever been around. He's taught me so much about the game, and I'm going to give him another month, because I know there have been stories written about rumblings from the players that, you know, and some of the strategic moves, staying with the Lucas Giolito too long and everything else. But I'm going to give him another month, and that team has had a million injuries. I don't think you blame that on the manager, and they haven't had their full team together basically all year. So I'm going to give him another month, see where they are, and no one's running away in that division, so I think we just need to be fair to Tony La Russa and give him a little more time, get his feet under him. He's been away for a long time.
Tim,
I just want to follow up real fast. The reason why I bring it up is not because I want to pick on Tony La Russa, because he is, as you said, a very smart baseball guy, but the MO on Gabe Kapler coming here a year ago was that he was overmatched as a manager based on his 2 years in Philadelphia. Has he sort of redeemed himself with this start, or are people still skeptical about him after a year and change?
Well, I think they're skeptical, but frankly, I think we're skeptical about almost all managers these days. Ray, you know this. The value of the manager isn't anywhere near what it used to be. He used to be in charge of the team. I mean, you imagine somebody telling Earl Weaver, here's a lineup you should play tonight. You imagine saying that to Dick Williams or even Roger Craig? That would never work.
I'd kill for that.
But that's where we are now. So we're not asking the manager to do all that much. I had a general manager tell me, my manager is in charge of getting us, our players, ready to play the game. Just getting them ready. We'll take it from here, upstairs. We'll handle the rest. We'll handle the lineup. We'll handle when he should make a move. And that discourages me greatly. So it's no longer this great job that it used to be, and it's no longer a high-paying job. So I think we're skeptical about all managers almost because they just don't have the control of the team that they used to because the front office won't allow them that control.
Tim, in a bigger, broader question to wrap this up, and thank you so much for your time as always. If Major League Baseball was getting $130 million for expansion fees back in 1998, today they'd be looking at around $2.3, $2.4, maybe $2.5 billion just for an expansion team. Having said that, are we looking at expansion in the next decade for Major League Baseball?
Well, all the owners would love to expand to get a part of that $2.2 billion to get an expansion team. But I'm sorry, I just can't see it happening in the next 10 years. We probably have as many teams as we need right now anyway, and we have to solve the Rays and we have to solve the A's, new ballpark, new situation before we can go expand anywhere else. That's the way I've felt about
Amen.
It for about 10 years, and we're still not a whole lot closer on either one of those teams. So let's fix two really good franchises that need a new home and need a lot of help here before we start to give another city a major league team.
Tim Kirkchen here on 95.7 The Game, coming to us live from the Dagobah system, and we really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay, guys, see you.
There he is, Yoda.
Did he at least get a bucket full of candy if he was going to dress like that?
I would hope. I would very much hope that he at least got some Star Wars action figures, something out of it.
Oh, I don't think he wants anything Star Wars related for the rest of his life.
Do you think he gets to keep the Yoda outfit? Does he have a free Halloween costume this October in his closet ready, waiting for him?
Again, that thing is a pile of soot as soon as he takes it home. Can I read you a box score?
Please.
You'll like this.
Oh, we forgot to ask Tim about the Orioles no-hitter.
We
Shame
did.
Shame on us.
Get him back on the phone.
Yeah.
1 second, Washington, Nick Dowd, major penalty fighting. 1 second, Washington, Carl Hagelin, major penalty fighting. 1 second, Washington, Garnet Hathaway fighting. 1 second, New York, Kevin Rooney fighting. 1 second, Colin Blackwell, New York, fighting. 1 second, Philip G. DiGiuseppe, 5 minute major, fighting. That was after 1 second.
So we are officially faced off and underway at Madison Square Garden tonight.
Yes, but I've only started. 50 seconds. Rangers, minor for instigation, Brendan Smith against Tom Wilson. Major, 50 seconds, fighting against Tom Wilson. That's Brendan Smith, too. 50 seconds, Tom Wilson, fighting major. 50 seconds, Brendan Smith, instigator against Tom Wilson. At 4:14... Not to bore you anymore, four more fights. At 11:24, two more penalties, one for slashing and one for a minor, I guess, for getting slashed. They were taking it seriously.
So, a little frostiness has boiled over onto the ice, as so often does happen in the NHL. And to all that, all I can say is...
That's fine!
I like that an awful lot.
By the way, since you asked,
yeah,
it's no score 12 minutes in.
Just fights.
Basically.
No shots on goal, just shots on face. I like it. I'm telling you, this is what hockey needs to do to police itself if those in charge with player discipline aren't going to be taking player discipline seriously. The New York Rangers today issued a statement that on its face was an acknowledgement of an injustice, but at the same time felt like a real cowardly way out of a hockey problem that usually gets solved with knuckles. This is how you solve things. And call it barbaric, call it Neanderthal. I'm calling it NHL hockey, baby. This is why this league is a great league. They police themselves.
They police themselves only intermittently and only spottily, because you didn't need any of these fights if the NHL had done the job it's supposed to do with player safety.
I like it. I like it an awful lot. We just put the game on in here. Hopefully it gets frosty again and again and again and again.
Yeah, there's guys hanging around the goal crease, but nothing else is happening.
Yeah, no shoving going on right there. But look, what happens?
Well, they haven't had a fight in 10 minutes. They're still a little tired.
Right. Yeah, they're probably saving it for the break, you know. They go back in, get an orange slice, and come on out.
Fight around the Zamboni.
Good times. Good times. You got sloppy, sloshy ice at the Garden, too, just punctuating all these fights. They can really
They always do.
Dig their skates into the ice and just really trade haymakers.
Yeah, there was a photo I saw from the first second of the game. There were six guys in each penalty box. That's 30% of your roster.
That's great. I mean, look at it this way, hockey. This is what you asked for. This is the situation hockey set up for itself. And I don't know if hockey deserves like a round of applause or a shame for all this. What do you think? How will it be received?
It will be received as shame, because a guy lost the rest of his season because of this, and there was no response from the league other than $5,000. This may be entertaining to a number of people, and here we go again.
Oh, in the corners.
It's
a great game to go to if you're a Rangers fan tonight. There's no doubt.
This has a chance, a small chance, but a chance nonetheless, of being like the Good Friday Massacre in Quebec.
Is that the most penalty minutes in NHL history?
Yeah. It was two fights on either side of an intermission that lasted 40 minutes. And you can see it on YouTube. If you have 40 minutes to watch, it is...
What year is that?
87, I think.
Okay.
It's Quebec and Montreal. Just Google it.
So like good old-fashioned Canadian ice fights.
Good fight. Well, against two cities that hate each other. I mean, literally, Chicago and Green Bay are Minneapolis and St. Paul by comparison to these two towns.
I like it. I like it an awful lot. I like emotions in games. This is where I think that the NBA actually gets it wrong. Not that I want guys out there punching each other in the NBA, but anything that pivots to an embracing of actual emotions is like penalized by the NBA. There is an automatic technical foul thrown down. Anybody, you're not even allowed to glare at anybody. A look can get you a tech in that league, which is just garbage to me. These are grown men competing for the most stakes that you can put on the topic of sports.
I get what you're saying, but I think you're wrong. And the reason why you're wrong is because of the malice at the palace. When you get guys that heated that they're willing to go in the crowd, when you get incidents where, Russell Westbrook has to be held back from going after a fan. That's how close it is. And those guys aren't protected. All you need is LeBron James to break his hand in a fight, and now you've got, owners having heart attacks.
Oh, look. You cannot cross that line between player and spectator. There is the line that cannot be crossed. But in the chalk, on the court, a little emotion to me should be allowed, and to try to curb the very first sight of it, at any sight of it, I always think is the wrong thing to do. And I've always felt that there was a little bit of we just can't be the league of black guys fighting, like real, really odd racial element to it that hockey never even had to consider.
That might have been true at the time of the Malice fight. It is now the reason why the reason why there is no fighting in the NBA is because while a really good hockey player is making $6 million a year, a really good basketball player is making $40
million. True.
And that's why you can't have it.
So no goons. Unless, look at it this way. If the Warriors need a fight, they can use Smiley Geach because they're obviously not going to be using him for basketball games, which is a problem considering how shorthanded they are. And we're going to talk about that problem that, again, only rears its head when they lose, not when they win. No, they're never short. They're never shorthanded when they win a basketball game, but when they lose, that must be it.
And they're never shorthanded against Oklahoma City.
Ever. We are going to talk to Anthony Slater about this of The Athletic coming up next year on 95.7 The Game. It is our longest segment of the entire day, uninterrupted by commercials. So stay with us. We're back in just a moment. Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
So there really isn't an awful lot of Washington Capital, New York Ranger hockey talk on this station for reasons that I don't think I have to explain to anybody. But tonight, we don't even have a hockey game going on at Madison Square Garden. This is like a demolition derby. And there are an awful lot of hard feelings out on that ice tonight. And that's what happens when sucker punches are thrown and statements are made and front office guys are getting fired. Good times all the way around.
Yeah, there are stories everywhere.
They really are. This is something else. So we got our eye on that. You don't need to pay any attention to it. We'll let you know who else gets hit tonight. But it's always a hit whenever Anthony Slater stops on by to talk Golden State Warrior basketball. Here he is, our Warriors insider, of course, writes for The Athletic. And Slater, we thank you for your time as always, man. What's going on?
No more road games.
Yeah, welcome home, baby. You're back.
Yeah, I mean, mostly just covering my couch, which has been an odd experience this season.
Right. I was about to say, you really weren't going out on the road anyways. It's not like you could spend a couple nights in New Orleans, eat well, drink well, have yourself a good time, and come on back. You did it from your couch. But the Warriors basically come on back from New Orleans with two very different feeling games. The one that they took care of their business, and then the one that got away from them because it seemed that they were a little tired, which led to your shorthanded column, which is kind of something that we've been talking about for a couple weeks. And it feels like that's what reared its head last night.
No doubt. I mean, I think the biggest signal that Steve Kerr sensed the tired team is the fact he took Steph Curry out earlier than expected. He wasn't in foul trouble. It was like 2 minutes left in the third. Yeah, I think he went something like 1-12. He missed 11 of his last 12 shots in all his last six threes. It was at the start of that kind of cold patch. He sent the tired Steph Curry, understandably. I mean, we know his usage rate. We know the production he's been putting up over a month. But to pull him said a lot, I thought. And, you know, there wasn't that many bodies to go to. I mean, Michael Mulder, who basically on the fringe of this roster, he was the 15th man who made it out of camp. I think on the road trip, paid 24 minutes, 27 minutes. I think maybe 31 one of the games, and then another 20-something. And that tells you kind of the state of the rotation.
I'm trying not to infer this because I don't really know, but is this maybe a statement from upstairs that there's no more money to be spent on this team, that all of a sudden the tax line is suddenly an issue where it didn't used to be? Or is there another explanation why they're comfortable with an 8-man active roster?
No, this is financial reasons. I don't think it's ownership trying to say, hey, we're not doing this for you because we want to show you that you should have been better this season. I think it's just them deciding, the same as they did last season, by the way, in the middle of a really bad season, that they were going to nibble around the edges and save tax money where they could. You remember trade deadline? Yes, they did the big Russell Andrew Wiggins flop, but within that, they put Jacob Evans and Omari Spellman into the deal, and that ducked them right under the tax. And that allowed them to get out of the luxury tax. It made all the financial sense in the world. They were the worst team in basketball, and they were going to avoid paying big tax money. But that was the first time we had seen this ownership group make a financially motivated decision. This is the second time. Think about the trade deadline this year. They sold off Marquise Chris and Brad Wanamaker, and then for, you know, the last month or so, they've been selectively keeping two open roster spots. Gary Payton, I thought, showed plenty. Gary Payton would have helped them on this road trip, but they didn't sign Gary Payton for the rest of the season because They could save some tax money by not signing him. And you can criticize that. You can say this is a financially motivated decision. Their argument would be they'll pay when they need to. They've made the huge swings, the Oubre tax money that they added onto the books, all the max money they've paid over the years. Should they really have to nibble around the edges for a 10 seed, an 8 seed? I think it's a good conversation to have, but these are financially motivated decisions. That's clear.
Let's forget about the two open roster spots and focus on the ones that are occupied by Smiley Geach and Nico Mannion. Is their inability to help the team, is Bob Myers the more guilty party? Is Steve Kerr the more guilty party? And why haven't they been able to find a solid competitive NBA minute from either guy?
Yeah, so I think there are two separate situations. The Mannion one I don't mind because he's one of your two-way slots, right? He's a two-way player. If you're going to have two two-way slots, I don't mind one being on, you know,
developmental track.
Yeah, a developmental point guard that you hope to turn into a backup point guard in the future. The Smiley Geach one looks worse by the day because he's now two seasons into his career. You got him at the 39th pick, which is a bit higher. They traded two second-rounders to New Orleans to jump up and get him there, and then they gave him two guaranteed years on the 15-man roster, and that's a lot more valuable of a spot where you could have a veteran. It was a miscalculation. Obviously, what's the Fran Fraschilla term? He's 2 years away from being 2 years away.
2 years away, yeah.
Yeah, if he ever, maybe when he's 24, 25, he could show up and be a rotation player somewhere, but that's still like four years away, so it's kind of been a waste. And it's probably the poster child of where they've made mistakes on the fringes of this roster. And yeah, you're right. I mean, they're playing this 8-man rotation and basically coming out post game last night saying, "No, we just don't have enough bodies." You're looking over there, you're like, Alan Smiley is active and available. If you felt like you could play him, and clearly 2 seasons into his career, 2 seasons filling up a roster spot, he has shown he's unusable in the playoff case.
Speaking of which. Are the Warriors in a position now to hope for certain play-in matchups and to avoid others? I mean, if the Lakers are basically backing up to them, do they really want that? Or would they rather face Memphis or Portland or, you know, God forbid, San Antonio or New Orleans?
Well, they don't dictate it. You just want to be on the 7-8 side. Because if you're on the 7-8 side of the play-in, you get that first play-in game. Let's say you lose it. Then you go and play the winner of the 9-10, so you get 2 games to win one. If you back up to 9 because you want to avoid the Lakers, let's say at 7, well, you'd have to win the 9-10 game and then go and win whoever lost the 7-8 game. Maybe that's not the Lakers. Maybe they beat whoever Memphis. But you have to, you know, you have two elimination games instead of a 1 out of 2. So I think you just try to be an 8 because that's what it seems like is probably their ceiling at this point. Sit in 8, stay ahead of Memphis, and then just wait to see who's 7. I think if you had to pick out of the 3, I'd take Portland. They're playing the worst right now. Dallas is, I think, kind of ascending. The Lakers are descending for sure, but at the same time, LeBron James will probably play in a play-in game if that's the case, and you probably lose that one. But you do kind of, that's a free swing. If you're sitting there in 8, you go on the road to L.A., you go on the road to Portland. That's a free swing to try to get the 7 seed. You lose that, you come back home to Chase Center, and you get the winner of what would probably be Grizzlies Spurs.
Anthony Slater with us here on 95.7 The Game, talking about the Warriors, who again are coming home. Road trip is done. 6 games to, you know, show us who you are here, finally. And it's, you know, what can you count on? I think you can count on a spectacular performance out of Curry more often than not. You can count on Draymond Green going into his Swiss Army knife, jack-of-all-trade modes, and playing even better the higher the stakes get. And I think we've officially reached the third Warrior that can be counted on. Andrew Wiggins, I think, was sold as steady Eddie contributor before he really was. I think I've seen enough here, Anthony. Yeah, I think Andrew Wiggins can be a Golden State Warrior without explanation, excuses, or trying to justify it. He's good.
Yeah, he's good. You know where he's good? He's a good defender. At this point, I might even say he's like a top 10, top 15 wing defender in the league. Now, I don't think that's necessarily 1 through 5, but I mean, they have a legitimately very good one-on-one wing defender. He's great against Brandon Ingram on the road trip all season. I thought he defended Bradley Beal well in both the Wizards game. I mean, name the perimeter scorer. He's kind of been a capable just 30 minutes on that guy matchup, and that is a huge revelation for the season. That might be the best future revelation they've had this season, is the fact that they have, do kind of have a two-way wing. Now, I'm not ready to call him a steady offensive contributor. He does still float in and out. I thought it was good signs in New Orleans that both the fourth quarters when Steph left the floor, he got aggressive. They need to try to bring that out of him and make that his nightly responsibility, you know, kind of try to dominate those non-Steph minutes. But, I mean, I'm generally with you. Like, he's just a steady plug-and-play small forward. At this point, you know, we've kind of compared him to, like, Harrison Barnes of yesteryear. I think he's better. I think he gives them more than Barnes ever did, really.
A bigger question, and I don't know the answer to this, and that's why you're here. Do you think over the last month or so that players have been sort of more deferential to Curry offensively, to the point where they might be a little shy to take the shot? And I'm not encouraging them not to be shy. I'm just wondering if you're seeing the way they run plays and the way they operate their offense, that it's very much more not just Curry dependent in reality, but Curry dependent in their heads.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of about the mix that they have on the court. You know, Kelly Oubre never feels Curry dependent out there. Kelly Oubre is going to go get his. Kelly Oubre is not playing right now because of the wrist injury. James Wiseman typically shot it when he touched the ball. How many times, you know, James Wiseman wasn't really a ball mover. He's a scoring center, and that's what he wants to be. And because you've just taken those two out of the equation and plugged in, you know, Juan Toscano-Anderson, even Kent Bazemore, those are guys that when they're on the court, their second idea is to shoot. Their first idea is, where's Steph Curry? Is Steph Curry coming my direction? Can I do a fake dribble handoff? Can I, you know, is he doing a pin down screen? That's clearly on their mind. And because they've now had a few, you know, several games together, I think that has just become kind of the identity of the offense. It's like, you know, first, second, third is, where's Curry? Can we get it to Curry? Can I set a screen for Curry? And then it's like, okay, well, they're really swarming them.